Blog Talk Radio.
For your support. I appreciate it. Today is What Say You Sunday. It's pretty much going to be open mic and talk about whatever's on your mind, your experiences, so on and so forth. And basically, we're here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And my co-host, Mandisa Thomas of the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta, they have their meeting today, their general meeting today, so she will not be here, but for those of you in the Atlanta, greater Atlanta area, you can go to their meeting there at the Atlanta Public Library, the Central Branch, 1 Margaret Mitchell Square, and this week is they'll be speaking about LGBT history. So this is LGBT History Month, and Sharon and Miko will be their special guests. So please, if you get a chance to get out there, go and show them some love. Otherwise, you can see all of their information on blacknonbelievers.org. You can also find their information on Facebook, as well as our information. You can find our information on the front of our Blog Talk Radio page. We can be found blackfreethinkers.com. And we're also available, again, yet on Facebook as well. So, yeah, this has been a very interesting week, very interesting week. A lot of information has come out, and it's just been, you know, kind of comical in a certain respect. If you would like to call in, you can dial us in at 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. If you would like to speak with me, you can press 1, and I will be more than happy to patch you in. So, yeah, it's been an interesting week. I posted quite a few articles on my Facebook wall, and one of the articles that a young man by the name of Eric posted on my wall, it was basically showing a little 2-year-old girl speaking in tongues and praying and preaching or what have you. Now, I don't know about most 2-year-olds, but most of the 2-year-olds that I've come into contact with, you can understand some of the words coming out of their mouths. And I just find it interesting that the people were basically pooping and hollering behind what the little girl was saying. And you can tell that she was being prompted by her parents. Have 843 on the line.
Hi, Kim. This is Veteran Guest with Derek in South Carolina.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
All right. I'm, I feel you on that. I think it's like, you know, I think religion is, you know, being left behind a lot by a lot of people now, a lot of people in the closet about it. And, they're trying to grasp people at the most youngest age they can now. Like, they have, like, 6-year-old and 4-year-old preachers and stuff like that. And they're trying to, you know, dominate the youth to get them brainwashed into that before they get old enough to know it's crazy.
Exactly. They indoctrinate them at a very young age so that way they can keep them in the fold and control them for the rest of their lives. And one of my issues with that particular video that Eric had posted was the fact that, you know, this is a two-year-old child. Any child, whether they're 2, 5, 7, 10, they enjoy the attention. And while she's getting the attention and the applause, because there are other videos out there showing, you know, little boys, little girls, teenagers, you know, preaching and teaching and shouting and all of that stuff, but they enjoy the attention. And when the attention and applause goes away, then what? You know, then these children end up having other issues because they're no longer getting the attention that they had once commanded. And then also they're drawing in money, and, you know, the parents are taking that money. My question is, are they using any of that money for that child's education?
No, I don't think so. I think it goes back to, like, maybe, like, I had a debate with a guy one time. He got mad and hung up on me because I told him, like, the way they do that with kids is no different than child movie stars like Macaulay Culkin, or, you know, mothers have their little girl booty shaking on YouTube and stuff like that. The kid's just doing it because it's getting them attention, like you said, but then the parents are not, like, putting this in a saving account for the child or, you know, go to college, and then they're blowing the money either way. It's all about greed in the end.
Exactly, exactly. And there was a documentary that came out in the 70s called Marjo, and it actually won an Oscar. And Marjo was another one of those child evangelists or child preachers. And he did a documentary basically putting them on blast, showing how it was all a big scam and how his mom would do certain hand movements or say certain things to prompt him and tell him what to say and do next. And, I mean, there are a lot of people going to his revivals. He was speaking at revivals all over the country. And he generated a lot of money. And at one point, his father ran off with the majority of the money, but he was still out there on the circuit. But he did a documentary to expose these faith healers, to expose the revival circuit. And, you know, it shook a lot of people up, but yet it didn't shake them up enough to actually make them turn around and think critically regarding religion. But it's been exposed, you know, quite a bit. But the people still go and give their money faithfully to these preachers. And, I mean, it's your money to do with as you please. I understand that. But what more do you need?
It's just sad because no matter how much harm religion does, it's always never enough to make somebody be like, oh, well, I'm done with this. Like Eddie Long, I mean, he, you know, used money or the, you know, cunningness against those boys and stuff, and, you know, had his way with all those boys and stuff like that because he had a lot of money, and he used them, and then he got called out about it. But I hear people all the time like, well, oh, that ain't true, that ain't true. I like, he's in court about this. I mean, what does it take for you to understand that this man, you know, took advantage of children and stuff? I like, what does it take for you to understand? It's like, no matter how many things, like, happen, it's never crazy enough or, you know, brainwashing enough for them to understand that, you know, this is a hustle. It's no more different than somebody playing three-card mommy on the street hustling you for some money. You can't win. It's all about them getting you and they walking away. It's a game and you can't win. You know, when you go to a church and, you know, everybody's in these nice suits and stuff all in the front of the church and you sitting in the back with your light money in your pocket and you're handing it over to the preacher and he's got a Cadillac outside and a Navigator or a Hummer or something, and you took a cab there or something, you know, it's a problem. I mean, if it's a church, it's about love, then everybody should be equally blessed in the church. But it's not. It's like professional wrestling or something. It's all a big hoax, and, you know, everybody's there to, in the front of the church and behind the pulpit to get their money. And, you know, you're in the crowd paying for all this, like the belief that it's real. And they're just there to, you know, pay their bills. And they put on a nice entertainment show for you. and then they leave and go on about their business and go to the strip club or go snort the powder or whatever they want to do afterwards and laugh at you about it and come back Sunday and do it again.
Exactly. It's smoke and mirrors. It's smoke and mirrors because there are some cases in which you think that the leadership team is being prosperous, but that's not necessarily the case. And, I mean, look at some of the congregation. You'll see people in some of the nicest clothes, driving some of the nicest cars, but when you go to their homes, they're, you know, basically eating peanut butter and jelly or bologna sandwiches or what have you, and they're putting on a front. Now, there are some of these preachers that are very quite prosperous, but most of that prosperity came from the members and the people that listen to their telecasts, what have you, and they will tell you quickly that they acquired their wealth from their independent projects. But where did the seed money come from? Who's buying your books? Who's buying your CDs? Who's you know, supporting you? It's the people in the church. And in many cases, from my experience, what I've seen firsthand is that the members or the supporters will basically go out and buy these materials to make the pastor happy and to be able to say, look, I bought your materials, hoping that it will give them a leg up or give them some type of favor. But what they don't realize is that when many of these people go behind the scenes, they laugh at them. They think the majority of their followers are ignorant. And in many cases, they are. And it's sad. And it used to anger me when I would see it. But even when it would be exposed, you know, the people would still go back. Not all of them, but quite a few of them. Because I've seen preachers get in the pulpit and totally put a member on blast, put all of their business out there, publicly humiliate them, and just treat them like crap. And they're back the next Sunday. They'll cry that one Sunday, go home and cry, and maybe, you know, talk badly about him for 5 minutes and then go back into that touch not sign anointed or judge not. Or they'll take the blame themselves and blame themselves for being wrong. And it's just amazing because I've seen a lot of emotional and mental abuse come from the pulpit down into the pews, and the people come back. And I don't get it. I don't get it. How many times do you have to be shown firsthand the dysfunction, but yet you still go back?
Yeah, it's like they like abuse. It's never enough, no matter how many abortions the preacher's getting for the young girls in the church or his deacon's wife or whatever. It's all okay because the whole thing with the deal with the religion is that it's not them doing it. It's the devil doing it. It's a demon. So they can get a pass. So they say, it wasn't me. I was just sinning. So it's so easy to pass the blame onto something else. It's not even there in the first place. So they get away with it, and he tells the congregation to pray for him. And, you know, he was weak, and he fell, and he did this and that. And he laughs at him, and, you know, he gets a few grand for his speech, and, you know, he goes on and do whatever he wants to do still. I mean, it's crazy. He makes a sermon and gets the money for the woman's abortion and goes on and do it again. Like, well, we got to be more careful next time or something. I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull off another speech like that. And goes and do the same thing, and it's such a bad hustle. I mean, and then churches don't pay no taxes, and then they have so much pull in the community and stuff. It's outrageous. I mean, they're the biggest hustler in town, and they don't get no grief about it at all.
Exactly. And, you know, they do. They turn around, and in some cases, they blame the victim. So if the leadership, you know, the pastor or someone on the leadership team happens to get a young girl pregnant or get caught with, you know, a young boy or what have you, first of all, they'll blame it on the devil, like you said, you know, basically absolving them of any personal accountability or responsibility. And then after that, if that's not necessarily working, they'll blame the victim. So if it's a young girl that they got pregnant, they'll try to say she tempted them or, you know, the devil used her or what have you. It's a no-win situation for anyone besides the leadership. because in many cases, the people have become so blinded, they've been so trained that they will just go along, you know, go along to get along, you know, so that they're not the next victims, if you will. And I've seen it in a lot of cases, whereas the members will tell on each other, go to the pastor or one of the deacons or one of the evangelists and tell something that they heard or they may suspect about another member so that the focus is off of them and on the other person. So it's just interesting, some of the things that I see in the churches just in general. But going back to what you said about them not paying taxes, exactly. That's the reason why you don't see a lot of these churches out here protesting with some of these parents about the conditions of the school. As a matter of fact, they will discourage them, because if the churches were to pay taxes, not only on their, you know, parish or their church, if they pay taxes on the property that they own, a lot of people don't realize how much property a lot of these churches have. They pay no taxes on this property, yet they still collect rent and they still, you know, produce leases, so on and so forth. But if we were to collect the property taxes, federal income taxes, and just taxes across the board from these religious organizations, there would be more money to put into the school system. The school system would be better. They'll be better financed. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, because the average preacher, I mean, I checked this out like a year ago. I looked around and just, you know, asked around the different people, like, just try and have small talk with them and see, like, well, what does your pastor do for a living and stuff? Like, well, you know, he gives all his time to the Lord, or he's so caring for the community. He doesn't have time to work and stuff like this. And most of them don't work. They don't work. They don't have no job, and they don't need a job. I mean, when you don't got to pay no taxes, and, you know, you got a church paying every Sunday and stuff, and you got a Goodwill or something over here, and you're making profit off of that, and you're getting that wiped out and stuff, or, you know, you got a little car wash here or something or whatever, and you washing, you basically doing like a drug deal or something, washing your money. And they get off pretty free. They never get hit by the IRS or nothing about it. You never hear, so-and-so preacher was running this club or something, but they do. I mean, there's preachers around that have business you never know about and stuff, but they got in somebody else's name or somebody owes them some money or something, and they get it cut out of the situation where they don't have to pay any money, they don't work, they're not self-employed or nothing, and they get away with it totally. But if you go out here and try and hustle in the street and try and get you a refund check or something, they're going to tax you up. I mean, you might not get busted in a year, but in a year or two, they're going to bust you on it. You're going to be paying a lot of taxes, but not no preacher. And he ain't got no income to prove for nothing. All he going to say is, I'm doing the work of God, and then everybody backs away from him.
Exactly, exactly. I've been telling people that for years. A lot of these preachers own liquor stores, own clubs, and they just put it in their cronies' names. That's why I said the only people prospering are the pastors and their cronies, their right-hand men. And basically, you know, they're, you know, it's a lot of money laundering going through. I'll just put it that way. And someone in the chat room said drugs. Exactly. That's why some of their members never get delivered. What'd you say, huh?
It's like the mob or something, and I mean, they don't have no worries about it. I mean, they're doing the same thing like Al Capone did, but they don't got no worries about it because the mafia boss is Jesus, so they don't got to worry about it. You know? They're not going to come against Jesus on this, so we don't got nothing to worry about. You know, we're the real Teflon Don. Nobody's going to touch us. You know, so they don't have nothing ever to worry about. I mean, they do whatever they choose to. I mean, religion is a mafia, really.
Yeah, it is. Well, someone wrote a book, and I believe they had a play, but I remember the book, and they were talking about the church mafia, and someone in the chat room said the mob is far better organized. Exactly. They are very, very much so better organized, but, you know, what I've seen just in certain cultures is they're trying to emulate and basically build themselves up as the modern-day mob, if you will. And so it's just interesting. But, yeah, you know, they're trying to build themselves up, but they aren't as organized. But, yeah, no, it's just it's really interesting when you look at the dynamics of the situations and when you try to bring it to the people's attention, the first thing they'll say is that you're a hater or that you're jealous or something to that effect. And that's not necessarily the case, but we're trying to open your eyes so that you can see what's really happening, how these people are taking advantage of you. And in many cases, most of these guys, I tell people all the time, check out your minister. Check out his background. Do a background check. Find out. Many of these guys came straight from the penitentiary.
Yeah.
Many of them came straight from the penitentiary, and they tell their boys when they get out that they'll hook them up and set them up with a church. You know, in Chicago here, Don Juan, the pimp, has his own church over here on the west side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to tell somebody that one time. You remember Malcolm X when he hooked back up? He hooked back up and with his right hand man, and he thought he was hustling in the mosque and was trying to get down with it, but he was really down for Islam and stuff back then. But I was like, that's a real deal scenario how they do though. That's how, you know, the average person when they come out of prison and stuff, they get into Christianity, get into Islam and stuff, and then they come out and they get into the organization to make money. They'd be like, look, you don't got to sell no dope. You don't got to kill nobody or nothing. You can go and do this, and you ain't going to get locked up. How many preachers in here locked up with us? You know, we don't got to do this no more. This is a real hustle. And they go out and do that, but it's a hush-hush thing that nobody wants to speak about.
Exactly.
They get a whipping daily.
Exactly. They get a whipping daily, and the last thing they want is to be put on blast at church or not to be in the pastor's favor, because again, it goes back to, you know, something that I've spoken about in the past, you know, about projection or living vicariously through others. And basically, we're going to start with the vicarious through others. A lot of these people live vicariously through their leadership team, through the church leadership, and they claim they want to see their pastor blessed in driving the best and wearing the best because he deserves it, but in essence, they feel as though if their pastor is blessed, then they'll be blessed and that one day they'll be living the same lifestyle. Well, we all know that's not necessarily true. That's not necessarily true. And when they're giving their little club membership fees every week or every month, you know, their 10% plus their offering, basically it's setting them up for poverty, that they'll never be able to dig themselves out of the hole. I'm not saying not ever, and I'm not saying everyone. However, if the money that they invested in that church, if they took that and invested that same money back into their household or their children, they would just yield better results. Because this is the way that I see it. If, you know, these ministers, these preachers will tell the people, basically, you have to sow into good ground to yield good, you know, results. Why aren't they sowing their money into good ministries? Because if they were sowing their money into good ministries, then they wouldn't have to ask anybody for any money. They would be at the front door every Sunday with a bag of cash, handing it out to every person that walked through those doors. So why is it that, the law of sowing works for the people but not necessarily for the leadership team?
Exactly. They don't want it like that. They'll never let it be like that, though, because that's the whole pyramid scheme of making you think that, oh, one day I'm going to be just like him. But like you said, it's never going to happen. They never, it's like the country and why we're so messed up right now and stuff, because, you know, the greed of the 1% is taking all the money from everybody else. Instead of anybody stop being so greedy and be like, you know, I got enough money for me, my children and my grandchildren to live off of. I'm going to put this money into, you know, a poor community and help them out. I'm going to take this money to Africa and, you know, help them get some agriculture going over there, get clean water or things like that. They're holding on to all this money, more money than they need for generations to live and stuff. I mean, Bill Gates is greedy. I mean, people like that, they have so much money that they don't even need no more money for anybody they see alive. and they still trying to make money and they're not trying to pass it out to anybody, there's enough money for everybody to live right and everybody to live level and have a home and have clean water and medical care and, you know, good food to eat and stuff. But because of the greed of a few people, we cannot all have that because they want to take the whole thing. Like Bill Maher said one time on Real Time, he said, the 1% of the country is like having a 100-slice pie pizza, and the first person goes up and grabs, like, 70 slices, and then, like, the other 30 people were like, well, why didn't you just let us have one extra slice? And, like, that's socialism. You can't have that, you know? It's the greed. You don't need that much. It's just greed
right.
and want more than you need.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, one of the people in the chat room, Ebenstorm, basically stated something that we've talked about once before about how the church is one big Ponzi scheme. It's a pyramid scheme. And basically only the people at the top are the ones making money and generating some type of income or profit. The people at the bottom will continue to be at the bottom as they produce children and family. Their children will continue to be at the bottom. One or two may creep up a little bit towards the top. Only way you'll really get to the top is if you go and start your own ministries, which is why you see so many churches now, because some of them have figured that out. But it's always been designed so that many of these people will continue to live in an impoverished state. It's not designed for people to really, you know, prosper, even though they tell you that you should be prospering because it's a no-win situation. They'll tell you that you aren't prospering because you don't have enough faith. So that way there is never any accountability that can be laid at the feet of those in leadership. It's amazing. You lose either way.
Yeah, they make that money. It's just it's like a win-win situation for them. There's nothing, you know, it's like no way to stop this unless people, like, open their eyes and see that it's a hoax. That's why I try and post stuff every day. I try and reach, you know, somebody every week and help them see the light of this stuff, and you know, and that one person can pass it on to some more people, and then those can pass it on to some more people so they can see, because it's sad. I hate when I see, like, this one girl, I helped her out, and she's an atheist now and stuff. She was giving her tax check every year to this preacher, and then she hit hard times. And she lost her place, and she was about to be on the street by herself. And she asked the preacher for help, and he hung the phone up in a rush with her and told her he'd get back to her and never call her. So she had kicked back with me for a little while and got herself back together, but her mother and the people in the church and all didn't want nothing to do with her, to help her or nothing. Then they found out about me, and they tried to call me a bad guy and say, why do you want to be around a devil worshiper? He's an atheist. And she was like, duh. He's like, I'm out on the street, and y'all won't give me no money. Nobody's allowing me in or nothing. But this man that, you know, got out of caringness and kindness of his heart, allowed me in his home and looked out for me while y'all wouldn't do nothing, and he don't even believe in no God. So how are you going to call him wrong?
Exactly. And what I find interesting is they don't even know what an atheist is. How are you a devil worshiper? We don't believe in God or the devil, but yet they still try to claim that we're a devil worshiper. And it's just interesting. But, no, that was really nice of you. That was very kind. You took her in, and, you know, you were trying to help her out and encourage her. And even though they wouldn't let her in, they didn't want her to be with you either. So I guess what did they want? Did they want her on the street, walking a stroll, doing drugs in a flop house somewhere? I mean, what would make them happy? You know, that's the question I would have asked them if I was her. You know, what would make you happy? You don't want me over here with him. You won't let me in with you. What am I supposed to do?
Exactly, because it's crazy when you giving somebody tithes every week ain't giving them your whole tax check every year, and then hard times hit you and you can't look out, I'd be like, wow, I like, you know, there's a bell ringing in your head now that you got hustled, you know. But some people listen, some people don't. I mean, it's just hard to touch people. Like, I mean, when, like, religious people come up to me, usually they walk away. Like, I had some people try and offer me the church. Somebody sent them to my door this morning saying they want to talk to me to save my soul. I was going to go to hell and stuff. And I was like, how do you know about hell? Let me tell you about your religion and stuff. And I broke it down to them about everything and asked them, you know, have you ever researched anything to use the internet and, you know, figure out about Jesus and how many messiahs there were before him and stuff? And they just got back in the car and left. People don't want to hear the truth. They're so locked on what their grandparents told them or the pastor told them. They don't want to hear nothing else. They just feel they got the truth that they don't want to hear right.
Right, right. Is she still there with you or has she moved on?
Oh, no, she's got her own place and everything now.
Excellent.
Yeah, she's doing good now. She's got her kids back and she's got her own place and everything. She's doing good.
Fantastic, fantastic. Those of you who want to call in, you can reach us at 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. And press 1 if you would like us to pick up your call and talk with you. Had someone in the room mention the Occupy Wall Street movement. Have you been involved with that?
I have it myself because I'm like got my own little business and stuff, and I understand. I feel the people that's out there doing that. I mean, if things were worse on me, I'd be out there doing it too. But I just, you know, it's not hit me that hard yet. I'm still doing my thing and making money, so I don't really have the time to, you know, go out and get involved with that. But the people that do have time, go out there and do it. I mean, if all you're doing each day is, you know, calling and checking in on your unemployment or calling and checking a few jobs, when you're done with that, go out there and do it. Don't let nothing stop you. But, I mean, if you still have a job right now, don't cut yourself short because it's going to be hard to get another one. If you, sign petitions online, do what you got to do otherwise, but don't lose your job for this because I see a lot of people around everywhere that don't have jobs, and when you lose them, you know, there's no other option besides you to get out here and do stuff that you really don't want to do because they're doing everything to stop people from getting jobs and stuff now, and it's hard. I mean, even people getting disability or getting food stamps and stuff now, they want to check them for drug tests and stuff to get food stamps and stuff. I'd be like, for what? You know, the government trying to hold on to all the money they can, like they were, I think it was in New York or somewhere, but they were locking people up if they went into a bank and tried and
right.
All of the money out of the bank. They were arresting them and stuff. So, you know, when banks are having so much trouble that they don't want you to take your own money back, then it's rough out here. So whatever you got, hold on tight to it with a death lock. Don't let go of it because it's hard. I mean, unless you can get out here and make money on your own, you're going to need some corporation or something to hold you down. So however rough your boss or manager or supervisor, whoever treating you, hold on to it because it can get a whole lot rougher. Always, you know, look at the other side of things before you make that critical decision.
Exactly. Exactly. We have another caller on the line. Unknown. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Who's calling? I'm good. How are you?
Okay. I just want to say that I heard you guys at the beginning, you guys were talking about churches and kind of like, you know, what they're doing is kind of like a hustle. And it's just like
exactly.
To say that I agree 100% with you. And a matter of fact, just about a few months ago, I was listening to some radio show, and some pastor of some church called in, And he was talking about how he's having a problem in the area where he's at, because he said that now a lot of the drug dealers are now starting to open up churches.
Mm-hmm.
And are running. Yeah, he said that how now they're running, they're doing just exactly what you're talking about. They realize the game behind it, and they're opening churches. And when I heard that, I sat there, I remember I said to myself, I said, you know what? Even though I don't agree with it, it probably is maybe the smartest thing to do, just in case, just because so much of these churchgoers are so blindly loyal that
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter if the police would come in and like run in on that place and find drugs in front of their face or whatever, they will still go on the side of those people or that pastor or whatever, whoever's running the church, and will sit there and say, this guy's been set up and he's not this type of guy, he's a good guy or whatever, but deep down we all know he's not.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like the same hustle, because I mean, I would look no less down on that drug dealer that opened a church than I'd look down on, you know, that preacher that takes all the tithe and money and goes to the strip club and blows it on the weekend. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, it's just a different hustle that person's doing on the street and stuff. So I mean, drug dealers, you want to go be a preacher, go for it. I mean, you know, it's safer for your occupation, so you can have a cover. Because then when you go to court, then you don't have to worry about your jury not going against you. You're pastor so-and-so, so you'll probably beat it. I mean, go for it. But I mean, hopefully it will get religion done away with. I mean, maybe if enough drug dealers become preachers, maybe they'll finally eradicate it.
I think that'll happen. I think we're in different times now, man. I don't think it'll be so easy for them to get away with it in front of the jurors now, because I don't know about you, but I just really see that a lot of people are starting to open up now. They're starting to wake up and realize that what religions are doing to us. And basically, I see a lot of people are starting to like leave the path of religion.
Yeah, I see that a lot other places, but I'm in the Bible Belt. I'm in South Carolina, and I'm like a handful of
atheists here.
It's Jesus to death here.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know you're from there. Yeah, I did hear about that area, South Carolina, Carolina, Atlanta, and everything. Yeah, that's a tough place.
Yeah,
exactly.
They shun me all day here. I'm the Antichrist.
you know what's even worse? You know, like my mother has a friend. And she's been going to this church for the longest time. And she always talks to my mother, telling her just about the bad things that goes on in the church. And you know, my mother tells her many times, why don't you just leave it? But she just wouldn't leave. I remember there was one time when she was talking about some of the bad stuff about the church. I remember there's one thing that she said. And when I heard this thing, I just felt so bad about it. And basically what she was saying is, she said that like the pastor at the church, when people go to him and confess, you know, or talk about, you know, problems, she said that how the pastor goes and, like, takes that same information and spreads it around the church, you know, gossips it around the church.
Exactly.
And next thing you know, it goes all over everyone, and everyone knows the person's business and talking about
exactly.
That same person behind their back.
Yes, no, you're absolutely correct. I've seen all of that firsthand, and it's amazing. You know, it happens all the time. And they will put you on blast from the pulpit. They won't say your name, but everyone in the church knows exactly who they're talking about, because he or she has already gossiped all the information all over the place. But going back to what you were saying earlier about the drug dealers opening churches, this has been going on for a while, because that's the best way to clean your dirty money. That's the best way to clean your dirty money. A lot of these churches, you know, the regular churches that aren't necessarily being headed up by drug dealers, they get a lot of drug dealing money, and they launder that money. If the IRS were to ever investigate some of these people, it'd be a whole bunch of churches basically shut down. But it seems as though the IRS is scared of some of these people, because you have a lot of these preachers even up there in the pulpit now endorsing candidates, and they're not supposed to endorse candidates. There's supposed to be a separation of church and state, but they're not adhering to that because they know that the IRS will not come after them, and then they've built up these legal defense funds with these foundations, and they're ready to do battle with the IRS, and the IRS doesn't want to deal with it.
Wow. Wow. I don't know if you ever heard the story about the mayor in Detroit that got arrested. This is a few years back. He got arrested. He was just doing a bunch of bad things. I can't remember, but he ended up going to jail for it. But I remember watching the news that he tried before when his trial started. I remember he tried to go to visit some of these churches, one of the churches there, you know, like they have a group of them that all get together. And he was ordering them to have like a talk with them, you know, obviously try to clean up his image. But it was during some time when the churches get together and they have to go through all these like different ceremonies or something. I'm not sure how to really call it, but so they told him, they refused. They said they can't talk with him now just because, you know, like they're too busy. And I always remember when I saw the news when they're showing like the same pastors of these different churches, they had them all together and they had them all walking out of when they showed them, they had them all walking. And when you see these guys, man, you would have thought that these guys were just some football players coming off the field, you know, getting ready to go to a club. These guys were all dressed up, you know,
right,
to the max. One guy had, like, I remember these shades with a gold rim, with gold rims on and everything, and they're just, like, walking, you know, like, the way how, like, you know, guys tend to walk when they try to approach a woman. you know, like, that's how they're all walking. And I just sat there, I said, what in the world is this? You know, like, how come people don't see this stuff, man? How can I see this? And people don't see this, you know, it's just so bad. And this same mayor, what ended up happening, he did end up going to jail. And when he came out, guess what he turned? He turned Muslim. I think that was him saying to them, he's like, oh, you guys didn't want to help me? Oh, well, I'm becoming Muslim now.
Plus, he needed that back in prison to keep him from whooping his ass.
Yeah,
ooh, no.
That too.
hilarious. But no, it happens all the time. I'm opening up the line 404, which is Mario, and 843. Have another South Carolina call on the line.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Good, yeah, how are you?
I'm here listening in, and I have my kids, so I can't really talk like that, but I agree with Frank from South Carolina, because I'm from here, too. It's, like, real hard, because I just, you know, started the, he actually was helping me to realize a bunch of things and stuff like that, and I started being a non-believer, and the whole church that I was going to turned against me. And I mean, it was just crazy.
Kim was just talking about you. We were just talking about you.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I'm outside right now. One of the church members just drove past and acted like they didn't even see me. It's a small town, and you see everybody, and everybody knows you and knows your business, and I'm just a monster. So it's just crazy.
Well, don't feel that. Don't allow them to project that, you know, that title on you as far as you being a monster or, you know, someone who worships the devil. Don't allow them to do that, because they haven't done any research. They don't understand their own religion, and you didn't do anything wrong. All you did was open your eyes, and you started thinking critically. It's nothing wrong with that. So don't allow them to project their insecurities and their issues on you. Don't do that. But, you know, the more you're around Frank and all of us, you know, you can talk to any of us or come to any of us, we'll be happy to, you know, give you some support, give you some reading materials, direct you to some YouTube videos so that you can kind of strengthen your resolve and learn how to formulate solid arguments that will shut them down every time. So you have a big support base. So, you know, reach out. We're here.
Yeah, it's just very hard. I mean, I'm even thinking about, you know, relocating and stuff like that because I'm like, when I see friends and stuff in the street, they're telling me, well, what's going on with you? The church is talking about you and all kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, they're supposed to be holy and, you know, this and that and all kind of stuff. Why are they talking about me? I'm not, you know, in the church stuff and talking about what they're doing, so I don't understand why I'm so important to them. You get what I'm saying?
You know,
I mean,
why you're important? You're important because you're important because you represent a shift in thought. You know, you represent the whenever there's someone who is thinking outside the box, is thinking in a completely different way, and they're still making it, they're still doing it, they're still getting out there, they're still working, they're still taking care of their kids. It shows not only the fallacy of the people who are talking against you, how they're thinking, because it's showing that there's another way to do this. We're not adhering to all this BS, and it's showing there's another way to think without being so restricted-minded that you're sitting up here condemning someone else for the same sins you're committing. You know what I'm saying? That's a lot of people are afraid of what they consider to be something new, something they haven't really encountered, something they haven't really studied or anything like that. That's a fear for a lot of people because it's something different. A lot of people don't like things that are different. They don't like things to change. On top of that, you know, I always thought about it. When people get on me about not being religious and whatnot, talking about God, you know, thing, and these, a lot of these people are the same people who I know them from the area, with the school with them. Some of them exes, some of them girls I've had flings with. And they're all trying to tell me how messed up I am for not believing in God.
Exactly.
How God's going to punish me. And I always look at that as like, say like, I'm an American soldier, and I'm giving away secrets, or I'm doing things that are un-American that were considered treacherous. I'm a worse person to them because I say, look, I'm with you, I'm your man, I'm on your team, but secretly I'm doing stuff behind your back I shouldn't be doing. I'm a traitor, I'm a worse person than that, than if I was somebody who was never affiliated with you at all, and I have nothing to do with you, and I'm still doing my own thing and still getting out there. And, you know, I have nothing, I don't owe you anything. So how am I the one who's worse when you have said that you belong to God, but you're still doing the same things I'm doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. If I can count how many times people told me that an atheist is somebody who worships the devil and stuff, it's just aggravating, you know. It's crazy.
Tell them they need to read about the history of the devil and how they even got that idea to begin with.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, how did the devil, you know, how did hell come into being? A lot of them don't do the research and they don't realize that the, you know, the devil, so-called devil, actually came into play from the Catholic Church and as a control mechanism in order to control the people, to control what they were thinking. You know, and it's just, it's a lot of things about the history of the church they don't know. Someone was telling us the other day about how they were arguing with someone that came from Catholicism and telling them that they weren't Christian. And the Catholic, you know, believer had to tell them that Catholics are Christians and Christianity started with the Catholic Church. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I remember that.
They don't understand. Yeah, you know, they don't understand their history. But, you know, to the young lady, you know, just keep your head up, you know, and if it comes to the point where you have to relocate, then, you know, make sure you do your proper research. But I can tell you it's going to be the same way anywhere you go. Anytime the word gets out that you're a non-believer, it's going to spread. So whether you're in that town or another town, just know that it's going to be the same situation.
Wow, it's crazy, but I mean, I thank you for the support, and I'm good as long as, you know, I have support and stuff and people to talk to, and you know, that feel, you know, that's coming from the same place where I'm coming from, you know. I mean, I think I can do pretty well as long as I have somebody, you know, to be able to, you know, you let some steam out with, or either, you know, discuss a lot of topics that I like to talk about, because it's really hard. I mean, it's not, I think me and Frank are about the only people like that around here. Really, because I mean, I can really just say it's like one or two, or I've never heard anybody else. I can't find anybody else that's on the same page as me. Everybody just going to church. I mean, I can be hanging out at the club with somebody one night, and then they'd be like, "Well, I'm going to church tomorrow," or something. It's just
right,
crazy,
right.
You know.
Because I think I remember you from a while. I think I remember you from a while ago. You called in once before, and I think you friended me on Facebook. And
yeah.
If you haven't, yeah, just friend me again. You're not my friend still, or didn't friend me. Friend me, and we have a group, and we talk about stuff all the time. And I mean, if you want to join in a group, they'll be more than happy, you know, to have you there. And we can answer your questions, and it's the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta's group. You know, we'll be more than happy to, you know, let you in, ask your questions, give you support, help you out with some things, you know, giving you the, like I said, the information and education that you need so that you can become more, you know, more versed in what you're believing and answer some questions. So, yeah, just reach out. We're here with a bunch of us. Mario's on the leadership team for Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. And Rhetoric has his own group, too. Thanks for adding me, dear. And, you know, we're here.
Well, I thank you very much. And with whom am I speaking? I think I friended you again on Facebook because I got another page. Yeah, I got another page up and stuff.
Yeah, my name is Kim, and I'm Black Free Thinkers. So, you know, if you look up Black Free Thinkers, it's the one with the little tree. There's another Black Free Thinkers on there, but I'm the one with the little tree. And go ahead and friend me, and we'll go from there.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything. And I know y'all hear the kids in the background and stuff, so y'all probably can go on ahead. I'll probably call in later on, but I'm going to have to do a little bit of stuff. I'll have to get off here, but I'll probably call back in.
All right, have a good day or not. Call me later so I can talk to you.
All right, then.
All
right. Anytime, dear. Take care. Well, that was nice. You know, again, you know, every day more people are starting to question, you know, the church, question what's out there, and they're starting to open their eyes. And that's the reason why I think that it's important that we have a face out there, a friendly face, and we reach out. We reach out to these people. We support them. We, you know, provide them with some answers. It's just as important that we do that. And that's one of the reasons why, personally, I advocate a solutions-based movement. I just think that it's imperative that we get out there and we're able to provide some services to the community because, me personally, I'm tired of pointing the finger at the church and telling them what they aren't doing because I feel that I can be out here doing it. No, it's over. That's over. I'm not going to point at them anymore. I'm pointing at myself now because I know better. And I feel that if I'm not out here helping people and providing the services that they obviously don't or, you know, in many cases can't or won't do, then it's up to me to find a way to get out here and to help, you know, the people. I'm supposed to be taking a training class with the Center on Halsted, which is the largest LGBT community center in the nation. And they just received a $1.6 million grant for HIV/AIDS outreach into the Black and Latino communities. So I'm going to do some work with them regarding that and also some work with their computer learning center. So I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. That sounds like a good idea,
yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just imperative that we get out, you know, there and start helping people. But, you know, like the young lady, not just her, there's been several other people that are, they consider themselves dissatisfied believers. I just think that it's important that we reach out to them and answer their questions and give them materials to help them become stronger because, you know, when they first transition out of the church, they're kind of a little confused, a little weak. Again, their social construct has been snatched away from them. Because in many cases, these people ostracize them, they shun them, they talk about them, and they need someone to talk to, someone to reach out to. So I just think that it's important that we all kind of reach back, if you will.
Yeah, that's why I'm searching and trying to find, like, if any more atheists were, like, in South Carolina, you know, reach me, Rhetoric Esoteric, on Facebook, because we're trying to find you out there. I'm trying to get enough people together that I can do. I want to do this Carolina Atheist Door Knocker thing. I want to you know, like you have the Jehovah Witness and the Mormons come and knock at your door and stuff. I want a team to come knock at doors in South Carolina and, you know, spread the word and see who's in the closet and might just see, like, well, wow, how many of y'all is there? And then I could just come up my mom and be like, well, you know, it's like 60, 75 of us and stuff. And they'd be like, well, wow, me and my cousin are, and my mother is too and stuff. I'm like, well, you know, let's have a cookout or something next weekend. Everybody meet each other and stuff like that because, like, she was saying it's like it's so hard to find people here like that. There's a few other people we know around here, but they're like trying to hide it. They'll like go to church and do whatever they have to do, and they just don't want to be about the movement and stuff. And I'm really trying to find some other people to, you know, join in, and we can spread the word and stuff and get people in the closet to come out.
Well, I'm not sure about the door-to-door thing, but you may want to talk to Howard. Go ahead, dear. What were you about to say?
Sorry, I just want to say to the guy, that gentleman that I was just talking, do you have a night school? Is there a night school programs where you live?
Night school? Yes, they have a point of night school here, yeah.
Okay, then those are the best places to check it out, to hit. Just try to, like, go to people, say, have an atheist group if you want to come or whatever. Because with my experiences, I realize a lot of people that go to the night schools and everything, trying to further education and everything, they're usually a lot of the ones that are the atheists and everything, and or let's say, trying to seek something different or starting to realize what's going on. And that's it. That could be one of the reasons why they ended up just leaving school or leaving certain institutions, what they had to do, or had to jump on the work market very fast, just because they couldn't take it anymore. They couldn't take, you know, like being around certain people or whatever, or a certain way that they were for so long. So, you know, they ended up just getting themselves a job, or that maybe, like, they have to do throughout the whole day, then they're going to start taking their night school. I mean, taking classes at night, and they start taking classes at night. I think those are the best places. Those are some good places to check.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm going to check that out, because I always believe, I mean, I don't know 10 atheists in South Carolina, but I believe there's 300. So, you know, I mean, it's like hard to just believe that, you know, I'm one of the only few and stuff here. Just, I'm, like, really open and don't bite my tongue for stuff. And, I mean, I know everybody's not going to be like that, but I think other people have the same views but just won't say it. But I'm going to check that out. I'm going to try that out tomorrow night, as a matter of fact, and see how that goes about. Because maybe that's a way to find some people. Because I feel as soon as I can get a good group of people together in my area, then, you know, I can get things started. Because I can be the head, but, you know, I need troops to help, so I can't do it all by myself. So I'm gonna use that as a way to see what I can get done.
What about
definitely
a meetup group?
I didn't hear you, Kim.
No, I just said, what about a meetup group?
Yeah, I've tried that. I've been trying to have a cookout and gather people from, like, the total Carolinas area for, like, 3 months. But it's like every time that week comes around, somebody's got to work or they can't make it out of town and they don't feel good. And it's just been like me and 3 other people that have been, you know, trying to do it. And I just was like, you know, best thing we can do is just, you know, have a get-together because we can't find anybody. So, I mean, it's hard. I was trying to do like a little medium-sized thing, have a little cookout in the park or something, and have everybody gather, but I can't never reach enough people, so we ended up having a thing at Applebee's and then having some drinks together and talking. That was the best we could do.
But, I mean, but that's a start. That's a start.
Yeah.
And once you get out there, you know, the word gets out, and more people will come. So just be patient.
Right. Yeah, I'm hanging in there. I'm just trying to find. I'm just trying to grab some people to, you know, get it started. Cause I think I could be a lot of do a lot of good things for the movement and stuff, but it's just trying to, you know, get people together with you, because it's like, I got, like, hundreds of friends on Facebook, but everybody's, like, in Florida, California, Canada, Australia, like, Georgia. There's, like, probably 200 of y'all in Georgia and stuff. It's like, sometimes I'll be thinking about moving to Georgia and stuff, because it's like, it's like the atheist city, you know, it's like, everybody's atheist in Georgia, you know, you can go down there and everybody's atheist. Because it's like here, I mean, it's like cricket sounds. I mean, there's nobody here.
Oh, that's too funny. No, and the minute you leave South Carolina, then all of a sudden these South Carolina groups are going to start, you know, popping up. Now, in South Carolina, I believe CFI and American Atheists, I believe they have groups there. Have you tried to connect with any of them? Because I know Mandy went to Camp Quest in South Carolina, and it was in conjunction with the group there. So have you reached out to any of the larger groups?
Nope, I haven't heard about them. The last things I was researching them was USC, the Gamecocks. They had an atheist group there, but it wasn't online anymore or anything.
Okay, yeah, they have a lot of groups. I'll try to post some links in your group later on today for
okay.
some of the groups in South Carolina so that you can reach out and branch out a little bit and, you know, work with, you know, a lot of the different groups. And then they can give you some tips on how to get out there and meet people and possibly get the word out. But, you know, you have to make that environment very welcoming, very friendly. And I already know you do that because you do that when you're talking to us. You're great, so that's fantastic. But it's interesting. It's interesting. You know, I'm just going to take it back a little bit, back to when we were talking about these preachers. And basically, what I find interesting is they cover up a lot of the skullduggerous activities in these churches. And when they get caught, basically, they, again, try to blame the victim. And, you know, as we were speaking earlier about these children, what do you all think about children in the pulpit, how they exploit and manipulate these babies to bring in money, and the parents that are allowing that and coaching their children? I just think that's horrible.
I think that the police should come in to handcuff them for child abuse. When I saw that video with the four-year-old in the suit in the pulpit and he's a preacher, I was just like, wow. I mean, like on the religion list with Bill Maher, I think, what was his name? I come in, he was have Melvin the Blue Notes, and he said the guy was like 10 years old and he was a preacher. I think now, you know, maybe that was like 30 years ago or so. Now you have a 4-year-old preacher. I mean, what are you going to do next? How are you going to beat that? I mean, you're going to say an egg in a woman's ovary is a preacher next? I mean, y'all, let's keep going. I know a 4-year-old child cannot, you know, have an understanding of life. You're lucky if you get a 4-year-old child to read and, you know, get his writing down and stuff. You can't expect a 4-year-old child to understand a God and all this stuff you kind of put on, even though the Bible is written in a fairy tale level in the beginning and stuff with talking snakes and donkeys and stuff. I mean, it's all good to get a child started. And, oh yeah, we packed all the animals in the world on a boat and all this stuff. I'm like, okay, but it's eye catching to the child, but a child can't understand. You wouldn't send your 4-year-old child down the street to go get you some juice from the store if it was like a mile and a half away. Put you up to walk down the street. So don't try and lead a 4-year-old child into, you know, deciding on, you know, how life began and will end and stuff and who created it. That's a little too much on a 4-year-old.
Well,
but, you know,
there's one thing, though, too, that you need to realize, too, is that I remember I watched a show on this, and they're showing that most of these people that end up running these, like, crazy cults, you know, these cult leaders and everything, when you look at their childhood, a lot of them actually started out the same way where their parents actually fought or trained them in a way thinking that they're just basically some angel from God or something like that, you know, or some savior or whatever. And to the point where sometimes the parents start to, like, look at the kids and say, oh, well, my child here, he's my savior or whatever. And basically what that happens is that that kid just starts to get all this confidence out of that and get all this arrogance. The next thing you know, he starts getting older and older. When people start telling him that you can't do certain things, he gets mad and lashes out. But at that point, he's already understood how to, like, gain people, how to, like, make people feel good and everything. And he knows how to, like, get people to run with him. And that's basically how he creates that cult. And that's what I think is going to happen to some of these kids, you know. They get to the point where they realize how to work with people, how to get people to go on their side just because they know how to do it. They've been doing it for so young. And then that's the next thing you know, they start becoming some of the worst people in the world. And they could end up, and in the end, could end up becoming some type of cult leader.
But I think all religions are cults anyway. I mean, they're just...
Right.
You have Islam that's like a 10 on the cult scale, and then you have, you know, Christianity that brushes everything under the rug. They're all cults. I mean, if you sit back and, you know, listen to a Scientologist tell you that the world's 12 trillion years old or something, and you know, that's impossible, or somebody comes up to you and tell you, well, a woman came from a rib of a man and stuff, and then you're tracking up $911 in your pocket. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, they're all cults. It's just,
you know, and
seriously.
And they never just stop to just ask themselves anything, you know, about that. And it's like, the Bible is the one book that you have to accept completely as it is. If you're reading an instruction manual on how to put together a shelf, and it says, instead of saying using screws, it says use big-ass staples or something like that, you're going to be like, why would I use big-ass staples? But the Bible is saying, you know, saying I created everything from completely nothing. I created it out of nothing. This dude here, I created him out of sand. But to create a woman, I'm going to use his rib. Why couldn't you just create that chick out of the same thing? Nobody even asked that. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just totally accepted that that's what happened. He pulled a rib out the dude. He pulled a rib out the dude? Yeah, he pulled a rib out the dude. Yeah, that's totally true.
It's so much bullshit, and it's like when in Genesis in the beginning, God created water and land and animals and man, and then he created the sky after that. I was like, how did you make plants and stuff grow without a sun and a sky and stuff? How did you do that? I like, do that one more time. Let me see a plant grow without a sun. That's photosynthesis. There's ain't nothing growing. I mean, everything will freeze without the sun in the atmosphere. You can't do that. But people that's following the Bible, they be like, well, all I believe in is the New Testament. And I be like, no, you got to take the whole book. You can't go in part in half
thing.
You just want to believe in one part. You got to swallow that
whole
pill.
Damn thing.
Yeah. And they take it like the Ten Commandments. I'd be like every time Christians come to me and stuff, I just be like, you're hypocrites. Or lawmakers. I'm like, you're hypocrites. I'm like, if you don't want to follow every one of those Ten Commandments, then you want to be a whoremonger, or you want to, you know, just do your own thing. Thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal is the only laws that you have in that Bible. You're not killing women if they are not virgin on their wedding day. You're not, you know, slaughtering people in the streets if they got two other fabrics on and mixed together, woven together, whatever. You're not killing nobody on Sunday and getting away with it. I mean, either follow it all and be crazy as the Muslims are, or just say it's stupid and throw it away. You know, one or the other. Just make your mind up. It's either crazy or you're going to follow it all. Do like the Muslims do. When they blow each other up and chop each other's hands off, I'd be like, they're fucking crazy, but they're following that bullshit totally. I respect it. But Christians, I cannot respect you at all because you're brushing all your bullshit under the rug and trying to take this. You're pulling all the good stuff off of the buffet and eating it and trying to forget about everything else. That I really don't respect. Just follow the shit all the way. I mean, if my neighbor was out there beating somebody with a stone because it was Sunday today, then I'd be like, well, I'm calling the police. That's their thing, but I'm calling the police. But, you know, they say that's crazy, but that's in your book. You walk around with your gun in your pocket.
Yeah. Do you remember, I'm sure if you heard of the term the Dark Ages?
Yeah.
Back then. Yeah. You know why it was called that term, the Dark Ages? It's because during the time where they called it the Dark Ages was the time when the Romans started to decide that they're going to, like, turn everyone into being Christian. And basically, they did that by the knife. They did that by the sword. And they were doing many things to people just to make them into becoming Christian. And Christians don't like to bring up that history.
No, they'll bring up other religions and this stuff. Like right now, they want to talk about Mitt Romney and his crazy stuff, but nobody can bring up their crazy stuff. You know, it's just like when you get to a certain crazy, then they want to bring it up in politics and then the media. But go ahead, Kim. I cut you off.
Oh no, not at all. No, not at all. And you know, when you start explaining the history to them about the church and the Dark Ages and, you know, what was happening with the Crusades, they want to turn around and say, well, those people weren't real Christians or they didn't know any better then, but we're enlightened now. And what's interesting is when you talk to Christians about the Bible and they claim that it's a living document, so anything that's living either has to grow and evolve or die. But yet they won't acknowledge that. So my thing is, if you're going to follow the Bible, why is it that you all won't update it? Why won't you learn the history of it and understand where it came from? But if the Bible is a living document and it's growing and it's evolving and you believe in it wholeheartedly, why aren't you following it 100%? Why aren't you taking your children out and stoning them because they're being rebellious? Why aren't you doing that? Why aren't you stoning women that are having adulterous affairs? Why aren't you doing some of these things? You know, what's happened? Why hasn't the Bible? Why haven't you updated everything? Go ahead.
Or why are they wearing wool? Because there's a part in the Bible where it says they shouldn't be wearing wool. That you shouldn't wear wool.
Exactly. Yeah. About wearing shit. Shouldn't wear wool or any type of mixed materials. So anyone wearing polyester, you're damned to hell.
Tell those pastors that come to church wearing all them $1,000 suits.
Exactly.
Like they say, like you're not supposed to touch certain animals and stuff in the Bible. I think what's in Leviticus, they got all those laws and stuff. Like, you're not supposed to touch nothing you can't eat. Like, you can't, like, they say you're not supposed to touch, like, a snake or owl and different animals because they're, you know, unclean. But the average nice preacher got on a nice pair of gaiters when he stepped in the church. You ain't supposed to touch or eat that, but you got gaiters on.
Tell
exactly.
Don Juan that.
You better not step on it.
Tell Bishop Don Juan that.
Right, it happens all the time. I just think it's interesting, you know. And what another thing that I find interesting, because I kind of had a little going back and forth on my wall with this gentleman by the name of Marvin. And it's interesting how God hates everything and everyone that person hates. And he got upset because I posted an article from Aaron Anson, Resistant Homophobia in the Black Community. And that's one thing that I don't necessarily understand in the church. You have a lot of, you know, gay and bisexual people in these churches, yet they sit there and listen to these sermons condemning them, and then, you know, a year or a month or, you know, a decade later, come to find out that the pastor is doing the same thing. Look at the situation down there in Atlanta. And he used to give those fire and brimstone sermons about, you know, homosexuality. And now he just settled a multi-million-dollar suit because he was, you know, living, you know, he was gay himself, or allegedly gay or bisexual himself. So that's what I don't understand. Why can't people just be themselves, be honest about who and what they are, whether they're, you know, gay or, you know, some type of addict or what have you, whatever the issue is, why can't they just be themselves? Be themselves. Why must it be an issue? Why must people feel that they have to point the finger at others? Live and let live. Period.
It's because that religion and the product of people thinking they're sinning and they're wrong because religions are made to make somebody feel like they're standing on a soapbox and everybody else is standing in a hog pen. You know, it's pitiful and pathetic because it's all about downgrading people. I mean, like, all religions downgrade women or downgrade darker colored people and stuff and don't say nothing about slavery and, you know, they're against homosexuality and all kind of things, but I'm just like, well, you know, if this all-powerful being that created everything, he created all of this shit. Why did he not create that? You know, he should have never created that. If it's here, it's because of him. So he should have, you know, not made that if he's going to hate it. Whatever happens, he allowed it. So there's no need to get mad with people and hating and causing wars and stuff over nonsense. Whatever's here is how he supposedly wanted it, but it can't be looked at like that. It's got to be, oh, well, this person is wrong and they're from the devil and they're sinning and we've got to kill them and, you know, we're going to hate them and we're going to beat them and, you know, I don't care if I go to jail or whatever about it. You know, all because of a book, a 2,000-year-old book that says, you know, hate somebody, but Jesus says love everybody and turn the cheek. But George Bush could say, go bomb this country and kill that man because he threatened my daddy. I mean, it's bullshit. I mean, everybody's Jesus, Jesus, but they don't follow Jesus. If you're going to follow Jesus, then obviously, when 9/11 happened and they crashed those planes into the building, if y'all were all Christian, you're supposed to turn the cheek and say, well, I bet you won't hit the West Coast and do that. You weren't supposed to fight because Christianity believes in pacifism and not standing up for yourself. So then the country would have to be like they claim France is, which isn't a whole lot of better way than we are right now. They'd have to say,
right.
Well,
you know, the statistics on the death penalty say that there are more people executed in the southern states than north and Midwest, and this is the Bible.
Yes. Between anywhere in the south, between Texas and South Carolina, there's a whole lot of hangings. They still do hangings. They allow hangings here. You know, in Texas and some other states, they still allow firing squads. They've got a lot of states have a lot of different ways they can still kill you and stuff. And they do it all the time, but they try and keep it out of the press. But in the South, oh, you get on death row, you ain't getting off pretty much. Yeah, they kill
right.
People around here all the time for nothing.
But the thing is,
exactly.
The reason why they have the death penalty is to get people scared so they won't want to do crime. But yet you're still killing and killing and killing so much people. So obviously you're not scaring people enough, or obviously it's not working to stop people from doing crime. So therefore, why don't they find something new?
But I think it was in the 60s that they had a court meeting where they declared that, you know, the the prison system was not rehabilitating people, and they tried and banned it, and they threw it out. I mean, nobody gets rehabilitated from going to the penitentiary for 10, 20 years. They go around other criminals and learn how to make it out better next time, and whatever crime they was doing, they learn how to do it better.
How to be better criminals.
Time to do. It's not nothing of anybody getting rehabilitated and going out, because really you can't. If you get a record, you can't get a job. I mean, you got no other choice but to do your other profession. You're not going to get nothing to take care of you and your kids and your woman and your probation fee and whatever else, your restitution you got to take care of. You're going to have to do something illegal once you get locked up. You get locked up and you're 20-something and you come out and you 40, you know you ain't got number one choice to do. Go out there and do what you know, because ain't nobody going to hire you. You ain't about to be no bank president.
Oh, yeah. That's true. You know, and I think that a lot of this is probably kind of off the subject a little bit, but, you know, I think that actually fuels more crime. It doesn't really become correctional facilities, and I think that's actually a joke, because I don't think you can correct anybody by putting them in a dungeon and with a bunch of other animals, and they have to fight for survival amongst each other, and essentially have to do some pretty dastardly things. Like, there's some people really aren't skinheads, but the only way to keep them getting their asses kicked every day is to become a skinhead. You know what I'm saying? That's how bad it is, you know? I mean, I see the need for prisons, but I don't see how they really help our society, though.
It doesn't. I mean, if I was a president, the first thing I would do is I would empty out prisons, and everybody that got out of prison, I'd declare this order for them. I'd have them come to court the next morning, and I'd be like, check this out. You got a two-way street to go down. I want to know what kind of skill you think you can do or what kind of skill you want to have. You're going to go to school for it, taxes are going to pay for it, and we're going to get you hired as soon as you get out on a job. Now, if you fuck up, I'm giving you the max of whatever you were supposed to be doing. But you have your chance now. You can't come back to court and tell me that you didn't have a chance, because I'm giving you a trade and I'm giving you a job. Be there on time, do whatever you have to do to get there. If you need public access or transportation or whatever, I'll get you there, but you better do your job. Otherwise, then I'm going to throw the system on you. But you're not going to jail because you were put in a bad situation from the start. I would never lock nobody up for that. If I gave you a choice and then you messed up, then I'd go ahead and lock your ass up because you had a chance. But this shit of putting people in a card game with the cards fixed, it's bad and it's wrong. I mean, I give everybody a chance. I mean, what do you want to do, sir? You want to be a brick mason? You want to be a car? You want to be a car mechanic? What do you want to do? What are you good at? Here, we're taking you to school. You're going to do it. But when you fuck up, then that's on you. Then nobody can come back at me and say, oh, he's a bad president. He shouldn't be in office and stuff. Make programs to help people, really. Not do things just to make the rich happy so they can make money off it. Do things for the people
right.
that don't have nothing that are unfortunate.
Exactly. But let me jump in here real quick. And that's the reason why I say we need to be a solutions-based movement, because those of us that know about these different programs that can help people, we need to be out here facilitating a way for these people to transition into these programs. Like, let's just say there's a transition house that someone who's just coming out of jail, they can live in transitional type of educational or work programs, you know, that they can get in. In many cases, they don't know about that. We have to get the information out there and to help them. And then in some cases, if we can provide jobs for some of these people, again, you know, with me, I want my own recreation center. And from the recreation center, that should be able to create jobs for, you know, the janitorial staff, the little security staff, provide opportunities for some of the youth to come in and use the computers, learn how to do graphics, teach them how to do certain things on the internet, and then work, find a way to help them get internships or externships at different companies so that we can prevent those young people from getting involved or going into the system. So that's the reason why I say, you know, we definitely we need a think tank in which we can all talk to each other and find ways to help others. And it can be done. It definitely can be done.
Well, I think we also got to make sure that we tell the young kids that, you know, you all have a talent, and basically you have to utilize that talent, you know, like, and if you're not utilizing it, you're pretty much doing, you're pretty much having slow death. And you just have to make sure that, and adults too, we all have to understand we all have a talent. We have to find that talent, and then after we have to create industry so we can provide, so that person can provide, can use that talent.
Exactly. Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. That's why, you know, I tell parents, when you have a young child and you see that a child has that talent, cultivate that talent in that child. If that kid can sing, send that kid to the, you know, music conservatory, take a couple of voice lessons. If they have choir at school and the kid wants to participate in that, encourage that baby with their talent. That is, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. And, I mean, again, these kids are so smart. I mean, in some cases, you know, they can't put together a grammatically correct sentence, but they can get on that internet and create a web page. And I just think it's fantastic as far as them being able to cultivate that particular, you know, talent. But then they need to learn how to read and write. But, you know, again, I believe that it's up to us to provide, again, services that aren't necessarily being provided or directing them to the services, because in some cases they are out there. They just don't know anything about it. And if we can find out about it and share the information amongst each other to pass along, we're going to help a lot of people. And I believe that's what it's all about, helping people.
Yeah, well, major thing is that we got to stop as society, stop trying to survive. That's the biggest problem. We're trying to survive. You have to stop trying to survive and just try to exist. You know, when you look at ants, when you look at a lot of insects, you know, they don't. It's like, you know, sometimes you look at these documentaries, they'll try to make it look like they're trying to survive, but no, they're actually just trying to exist. You know, ants, they do everything just to, you know, they don't care about themselves. They just do everything just to keep their society moving and running and functioning. That's the same way we need to start, like, thinking as humans.
That's true. That's very true. So, you know, again, it starts with us. And that's the reason why, you know, I know a few of us are putting together our 501c3s so that we can apply for some of these grants and network and get out here and meet other people and disseminate a lot of the information. But we have to start somewhere. So, you know, I'm starting with me and getting out here and getting more actively involved and talking to people and trying to create a welcoming and nurturing type of environment. That's the reason why, you know, we invite people to call into the show to participate, because sometimes people just need someone to talk to. They just need an outlet. They need to be able to vent, and that's fine. You know, we encourage that because it's better that you go ahead and get that out and know that you have people around that are supporting you. You're definitely not alone. You aren't. And even though we may be in different parts of the country, that's fine, too. Just because I live in Illinois and you may live in South Carolina or Georgia or California or what have you, that's fine. We can still convey our thoughts and our ideas to one another and share information. I just think it's very important that we do that.
Hey, Cam?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, how y'all doing? How y'all doing?
All right, how you doing?
We're doing
good.
But I was going to back up a little bit, about 10 minutes from what you said about that pastor in Georgia that settled out of court for millions of dollars. I've heard numbers. I wasn't gonna say the name, but yeah, Bishop Long. I've heard numbers of I don't know about somewhere between $4 and $5 million a piece, and that could be wrong. You know, that's hearsay. You read stuff on the internet. You don't know if it's true or not. But even if it was just $100 a piece, even if he just set it out for $100 a piece, my concern is, how is it that this man's congregation is still his congregation, knowing that he settled out of court for millions of dollars? One, where did that money come from? And two, the fact that he settled out of the court for millions of dollars lets you know that there's some foul play there. I mean, come on.
I agree.
I don't get it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's a collective hypnosis, you know what I'm saying? It's not like there's a magician sitting up there, you know, slowly hypnotizing one person at a time. You get enough people to believe in this stuff, those people will start infecting the people around them, and sooner or later, everybody begins to believe this and stuff like that, and they inadvertently hypnotize themselves and each other into believing either, one, he really didn't do it, two, it's not that bad, or three, he should be forgiven for whatever he did. And you know, like when it came down to the Eddie Long situation, even before he settled, there were people who outright said he did not do it and stuff like that, ignoring every detail that came out. I mean, true, there was a trial. So, you know, but their minds wouldn't even process a possibility that he could have done it. And then after he settled for $25 million or whatever, it's like they're still saying, but no, he couldn't have done it. You know, it's like it's a conditioned thing in which they don't want to believe. They put so much faith into this man that they've started worshiping Jesus or God through this man, as almost as though he's a conduit. And they're not thinking that they don't need that dude. You can read the Bible at the crib, but see, you know, if you read it at the house, you don't have people telling you select passages to read to keep you away from the stuff that you probably shouldn't read.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And even when you try to tell them, you know, again, using their Bible, you know, with them, if you go to 1 John 2:27, it says, "But the anointing which ye have received of him abideth in you, and ye need not that any man teach you. But as the same anointing teacheth you of all things, and is truth, and is no lie, and even as it hath taught you, ye shall abide in him." Basically, it's telling you, you don't need a preacher. If you go to their own Bible, because again, with the scriptures, you can get them coming or going. It's a double-edged sword. There's so many contradictions in that Bible. But again, if you want to be spiritual, you want to be religious or what have you, you don't necessarily have to go to a church to get fed whatever you feel that you are being fed. And it's absolutely ridiculous. But no, you're right. You know, they could not fathom the idea that, you know, Eddie had done I refuse to call him by any title, that Eddie had done any of these things. And if he was truly innocent, he would not have settled. But it was the insurance money that settled the case. But who paid the insurance policy? The people. And Mario is correct. It is like a mass hypnosis. I try to explain this to people all the time. It's the lighting, it's the music, and it's the temperature of the room. And that's how they kind of lull you into, you know, that state of comfort where you let down your defenses and they're able to get it. It's absolutely amazing, but people, they don't want to hear it. But it's true.
Yeah. But my question would be, you know, you said the insurance policy paid that, but why would you need insurance for something like that? I mean, that's just, I don't know. And like you said, the people are paying that insurance policy. I don't know. Maybe it's something I'm missing. But
that sounds kind of funny to need an insurance policy on, you know, molestation and raping the boys. I mean, who sends out an insurance policy on that?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I was watching a show. Or sorry, I was listening to a show, and they had, and the, some people were talking that when you, that went to the church, and they were saying that, like, for the longest time, you know, at that church, almost every, you know, every Sunday, they have like about, I think it's like five, yeah, I believe it was five donation bins that goes around, that gets passed around that church, you know, every Sunday, and that, you know, people go into, and, you know, they got to put money in, you know, donate, you know, goes to donation, they, or what they say. I, if someone's been doing that for like years and years on end with five donation bins and people blindly accept this, you always put in money in there, man, you're gonna have a lot of money, man. He has a lot of money, man. And the problem is, these same, is that his congregation, they just don't want to believe that, that that money is coming from them. They just don't want to believe, even though I know deep down they do, they know. And that, again, just comes back all into this mass hypnotism that you're just saying, you know, like, it's sad, but it's true.
Exactly, exactly. The money is coming from them. And the ones that are still out there, they get angry when I talk to them about these situations, whether they're a member of his church or other churches or other situations. And I tell them, because many of them say, you know, be quiet, don't talk about it, or they'll go into that touch not thine anointed or judge not. And I try to explain to them that their silence is, you know, tacit agreement. They are complicit with that person, especially if the person is a repeat offender. You are now complicit. You are now giving him permission to go out and possibly molest other children or mess around and create babies with, you know, other women in the church outside of his wife. You know, me personally, I'm not necessarily big on marriage in the first place. And my thing is that if you don't want to be married to the same woman or to a woman, then don't be. Don't be. But if you're going to commit to that woman and you're going to make her feel as though it's you and her, then, you know, I just think that, you know, when you go outside the boundaries of what was expected, then, you know, you should understand how people are going to get upset by that. But going back, you know, basically, the people that are silent, you know, again, that's tacit agreement. And if the person, again, is a, you know, repeat offender, you're complicit now. As far as I'm concerned, you may as well do the same thing because you're telling him it's okay. That's if you're not doing the same thing. Because in some cases, the people are silent because they have so much going on in their lives that they're trying to cover up or they don't want other people to know. And, you know, the pastor or somebody in leadership may know about their past indiscretions that, you know, they won't say anything because they don't want their dirt getting out, which I just think is horrible.
Yep, I agree. Actually, I watched, there's a girl, there's a woman, I can't remember her name, but she actually came out with a book, and she was talking about how she was molested by her pastor and her father and actually other people within the church. And she said that, like, as it was going on, a lot of people kind of knew about it. But, again, they're just silent about it. And, you know, it's just a real sad story, you know, like when I was hearing the story. But my only problem was that, again, and this comes back down to the mass hypnotism that goes on, is that she, you know, is completely, she left the church, you know, like she goes out, she speaks about this thing and tries to like tell other people about what goes on. But her way to like combat this is that she ended up coming out with her own church. And I sat there, I'm like, oh man, you know, like why? You know.
Exactly. No, that's true. That's why you have First Baptist, Second Baptist, Third Baptist, Old Baptist, New Baptist, and all the other denominations out there because, you know, basically someone felt they had a better way of doing something or they didn't agree, so they will go out and start their own churches. And it's just, it's absolutely amazing. You see, you know, all of these churches, you know, several churches on the same block, little storefront churches. My thing is, why can't the three of you get together, have one church, and call it a day? I mean, I don't want them to have a church at all, but if you're going to have one, why can't the three of you get together and, you know, work together and save money that way? But, again, it's just, it's all a big scam, no matter how you look at it. Because what I don't understand just in general is if you've been going to church 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and it's the same thing being taught and preached over and over, then why aren't you getting it? Why aren't these other people getting it? Why can't they live according to the Bible if that's what they truly believe?
Because it's like, it's so crazy. It's like, I think it's 43 different Bibles, and I think they got like 30,000 different, like, views of the, I'm not sure on the views, but I think it's like 30,000 different kinds of Christianity they have, all different sects and stuff. I like, how do you have so many different, I mean, Jesus and God fucked up so many times, you have to have this many, you know, different types of Christianity. I mean, how do you have that many?
Exactly. You know, you have all of these, like you said, the different sects, the different cults, because I consider them all a cult. But, yeah, you know, especially in Christianity, you have just all of these different denominations, and, you know, I've shut a few of them down saying, basically, until you all can agree amongst each other, you know, how can you come to me and tell me that my not believing is wrong? You know, you all don't believe each other.
I said the same thing once upon a time. You know, and it's a trip, you know, like you drive down the street. Just drive down any road, especially a rural road, and count how many churches you can see within on that strip, you know, or if you got like a satellite map that can show you the churches in your area, count how many are in a one square mile radius. And it is a trip how many of them you need. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, there's one going, I mean, obviously, I mean, you don't put a McDonald's in every town unless there's something for McDonald's to get out of. So obviously all these churches are going up because there's some benefit to the church, and it sure as heck ain't getting and about saving souls, because one down the street. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So
no, you're right. Exactly. It's, you know, you get mad at one pastor, you just walk up the block and go to another church. You know, but it's still
right.
The same gang. But yeah, but no, you're right. You know, we can't agree with each other. You know, if you want to go into a little deeper, you have the oneness, and then you have the Trinitarians. One believes in the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit being three entities, and the other one believes that it's three in one, so it's one entity. And it's just, it's really interesting, and when you try to explain to them just the logic in it, the about the three entities being separate, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, they're in a polytheistic religion, but they don't believe that.
Nope.
And I'm like, poly means more than one, so where are you getting this from?
Yeah, I had that argument with a Catholic one time that I told them they was in a polytheist belief. They said, no, we just believe in one God. I'm like, but I like what? I like Christians believe in three gods. I like y'all believe in those three and angels and Mary. I be like, y'all believe in like dozens of gods. I like, y'all, I like, because, I think, like, Jesus is, like, the sixth person they pray to in a bad situation and stuff. I'm like, how do you come up with you pray to one person and then your Messiah is, like, you know, the sixth person out of the list you pray to?
That makes sense.
But no matter what, no matter how all the different Christian groups I've observed, basically, there's one thing that I don't think you'll see with any of the Christians, but it was a fact that happened in early Christianity, and that is, well, many of the Christians worshipped Imhotep. And if you don't know what Imhotep is, Imhotep was the world's first multi-genius. He was one of the shortest people in the world. He was very short, but he was like a pharaoh and everything, and you know, like, it's funny because, you know, like, all these different Christian denominations, they believe in all these different things, but none of them, or at least the ones I've observed, will never even give any type of you know, like, none of them, like, still know who, either know or will give any respect to Imhotep.
Right, Exactly.
And one of the reasons, too, is because I'm a type with black.
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
Exactly.
He was the first multi-genius. There was many different structures put all over the world, and there's like temples just, you know, in his name, just because he was just he knew how to heal. He was the first person to perform brain surgery, and many other things. He's the person that, you know, like a lot of the Greeks base their medical science behind around. But they tried it, but they changed it, and they changed it to another. They instead named him under another name, can't remember, and made it into a white man. But still to this day, and that's why I look at a lot of the black churches, and when I see what they believe in and everything, I still wonder, I'm like, how in the world do you guys not believe in Imhotep or even, like, understand Imhotep? And the reason why is that I don't think they'd want to learn that, or the pastors would want them to know that stuff, because that would start to make the people start to think for themselves, and therefore there would be no more church anymore, plain and simple.
Hey, spell Imhotep. I want to read up on that.
It is Imhotep. I'll repeat it. Imhotep.
Yeah.
Is that
and,
Imhot as in Tommy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay,
yeah,
Imhotep. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And then also look up Mithras. You know, Mithras, Mithras. Mithras.
R-A-S.
Mm-hmm. R-A-S, yeah. And Mithras was pretty much the equivalent of Jesus. If you go back and you start looking at the history of all of that, you know, I had posted that in the group. I think I put it on my page as well. But, again, you know, when you start trying to explain to these Christians how their religion was set up, about how December 25th, the alleged birthday of Jesus, how that's the winter solstice, and you try to explain how it was a pagan holiday, and how they incorporated all of that into church to bring in more believers, they don't want to believe you. And, I mean, they still do that even to this day. You know, it's called being a seeker-friendly church. And they adapt, you know, because now they have gospel rap, gospel hip-hop. You know, you have your praise dances. You have 60,
which is the lamest shit ever.
Creeping around trying to dance around in the church, knowing, and, you know, when they pass you, all you smell is Beignet. You know, I guess, you know, they wanted to be a cheerleader. And now they get a chance to do it. And, you know, I'm being a little facetious there, but the concept is pretty much the same.
Right. You know, one thing that I've learned in the past few years is that, and this goes back to what you said about Bishop A. Long's congregation, and you said people get mad at you, tell them something about their pastor and, you know, give them the facts and whatnot, and they know what's going on. They watch the news like everybody else, but they know what the deal is. I think people naturally don't like to be tricked or duped or feel like a fool. I think some of these people deep down inside know that this dude really did this, and not just that church. I'm talking about religion or Christianity as a whole. When I have these kind of conversations with people, or I get into a debate with somebody, and I usually don't try to, but it just happens. You know what I'm saying? Usually, people get mad, and they either want to hang the phone up on you, or they want to stop talking to you, or they say, let me get away from you before I get hit by lightning, and there ain't no damn clouds in the sky. I think people get mad naturally. Because they don't like to be tricked, and some of them have a feeling or may know deep down inside that what they're reading or what their pastor is telling them is bullshit. But they've been feared or scared into thinking this for so long. They've been so submerged in it. They don't want to see anything besides what they've been told. They don't want to look into anything. You know what I'm saying? They don't
want
to.
Mike, you hit the nail right on the head right there. People don't want to know or feel as though they've been tricked or made a fool of. You're absolutely correct. And that's the problem.
Hurry up.
Right.
I'm happy you brought that up because there's many shows on Blog Talk Radio, Christian shows that I've called up, and they usually end up either hanging the phone up on me, ignoring me, and to the point like they'll just basically cut me off. Like, you know, I'll ask a question, and it'll be something that will be tough for them to answer, and they'll start to make up some stupid answer, and they'll be like, and then they'll cut the phone off. Yeah, they'll cut the phone off, and they'll be like, did that answer your answer? And then they'll be like, okay, great. And, you know, call back another time. And they'll just, like, hang up. And, like, I'm trying to say, no, it didn't and everything. But they've paused the line, so I can't say anything. And they'll just, like, end up going to another call. Some of these stations, I don't call anymore, but there was a time when I used to call a lot. At some of these stations, like, they know me now. They know my voice. That even if I just say to try to, like, utter, like, you know, one little thing, they hang up. They hang up right away. So it's like, it's useless and pointless. There was one show where this was like the only show where I actually stayed on for a long time. I may have stayed on the line for maybe 45 minutes, but it was me versus, they kept letting in all these other callers on the line, and it was me versus like maybe about, I'd say about 8 people all calling up. And I just remember one of the pastors just kept saying, and like, this is the thing that they always say, they keep saying, man, you know, like, you're troubled, man. You're troubled. You need help. I will help you. I'm like, how am I troubled? How did I need help? I'm just asking a question. And they would never answer the question, but instead they'd be like, you need help. You know, the devil is, you know, like, is leading you in the wrong way. Either that, or they're saying that I'm the devil itself. It's just nonsense.
Join the club. I used to call up some of the Christian shows on Blog Talk Radio and talk to them about their religion. If I didn't call them up, I would be in a chat room, you know, talking to the people. And, you know, I've never been kicked out of any of the chat rooms, but I've been cut off on the telephone. You know, they would say something and then cut me off. And after a while, I just figured that it was an exercise of futility. But, you know, I still try to go in every once in a while and plant a few seeds, and I provide them with links showing them the documented evidence. But they don't care because, again, you know, they walk by faith and not by sight. And so, again, they have faith that this is true, this is what they've been taught. And then they get angry when we turn around and let them know that if they can believe that or, you know, believe that or have faith in that without evidence, then we should be able to dismiss it without evidence.
You know, one time, the last show I called, actually, I didn't call up. I sent a message, and they're talking about Jesus, and I just wrote in the show, and I said, you know, through my, you know, like, research and everything, it looks like there was never really was someone named Jesus. And I always remember this. A woman said, you know, like, woman read it, and she was like, what? I can't believe you said that. And then the other woman that hosts the show comes on, she said, well, one thing, you can't research the spirit, man. The spirit is something that's always there. You can't research it. You can only be in it. And I was just like, what? Like,
yeah.
No sense. They just went on to it with the show and, like, ignored everything else I put on. I just ended up leaving. It's just nonsense.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what they fall back on, that you can't, you know, research certain things or that, you know, you can't prove it, but they can't prove it either. And we're not necessarily trying to make anyone not believe. They're trying to convince us to believe. So the burden of proof is on them. You know, you have to prove it to me. Otherwise, you know, I have no reason to believe what you're saying. And it's interesting. But, again, you know, you plant those little seeds. You try to give them the evidence. There are some that will actually go and look it up. And, you know, one particular dissatisfied believer, as she likes to call herself, basically she was on a religious blog, and I used to go on a blog and post a lot of things. And basically she did the research, and slowly she's making her transition out. She was saying that she did not know that information was out there. She didn't know how to research it and how to look it up. But as she started researching and studying for herself, she saw that a lot of the information that me and, you know, a couple of other people were putting in the blog, she saw that it was correct, that she had been lied to. And that's the main thing. A lot of these people, when they transition out, they go into a little depression because they had been lied to. They gave a lot of time, money, energy to something or to someone who wasn't worthy. They didn't deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I think, you know, that we just, I think that one thing is, you know, tradition is another thing, and tradition and history. I mean, I know people who have been going to the same church for like 3 or 4 generations, you know, and it's like that's the only thing that they know, that's the only thing that they do, and, you know, that's the only thing that they're about, you know. And it's like everything, family reunions happen there. Anyone dies, the funeral is held there. They're buried if the church has a grave site, that's where they're buried. And so it's like so ingrained in the society that it's like this is important here. We need this. You know, and some people just don't understand how really you don't. You've been taught that you need this. You've made yourself believe that you need this. You really don't. You know, it's like, you know, I asked this person one time, you know, if prayer heals, why did you call the police when you why did you call 911 when you were in the car accident? They were like, well, that's not a fair question. I'm like, well, why is it not a fair question? Like, because God works in conjunction. And I'm thinking, that's stupid. And I said, why didn't he just heal you? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's stupid, man.
It is like. My mother, like, 3 years ago, she got attacked by 2 pit bulls, right? And I had her preacher come by and be like, the Lord don't let you go through no more than you can withstand. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, a higher being is supposed to strike a lightning bolt down on me for the things I say. Let my mother get ripped up by some pit bulls and she almost lost her thumb and ripped the muscle out of her arm and stuff. I like, well, fuck him. I like, that's too much for anybody to deal with. I like, 2 pit bulls? I like, let him go rip him apart. I like, how you going to say he's going to, you know, let you not withstand more than you can take? I like, 2 big muscle down pit bulls ripping apart a little woman? No, I don't think so. He doesn't care. All right, really? All right, that's enough proof for me right there. I'm done.
Exactly.
Obviously, that gay guy that they beat to death and set on fire in Africa, apparently, he couldn't handle that. I mean,
that is horrible.
It was very horrible.
Yeah, I saw the video. I was sick to my stomach behind that. And, you know, ironically, a lot of the evangelists, preachers, teachers from America, they're the ones going over there and pushing for those, you know, anti-same-sex bills or, you know, the anti. It's horrible. It's horrible. They're going over to Africa, and now they're exploiting the people of Africa even more for more money. So the little bit they have, they don't, you know, in some parts of Africa, especially in Johannesburg is like Manhattan. But, you know, some of them have money, but quite a few of them are, you know, disadvantaged. And I just think it's horrible.
Yeah, I didn't really tell you from the beginning, but, you know, I'm calling from Canada. And basically, where I live, like, there's a growing Ethiopian community where I live. And there's one guy I know, and he's Ethiopian, and they're getting a lot of those evangelists going down to these places. And last time I talked to him, he had some book that he got from one of those evangelists. And just think of it, it's just like this evangelist, like just a, you know, like this white evangelist, and he gave him this book on like prosperity, you know, like, and how to gain money through prayer and everything. And I sit there and I see the guy reading it, and, you know, like a lot of other people in this community tell me read the book too and everything. But at the same time too, this same guy that writes this book lives in like basically almost like a palace. And these guys, these people here are just living in, like, you know, low-income housing. So I sit there, I say to myself, like, what in the world? Like, you know, where is this prosperity going to come from, you know? Like, they told me he's been doing it for a few years now and everything. And it's just ridiculous. It's sad. You know, like, these people are coming in and they're just taking advantage of them.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening. And I just wanted to let everybody know there's only 25 seconds left in the show. If you want to call in real quick, 310-982-4273, 310-982-4273. You can call in. I want to thank everyone who came to the chat room today that listened in on the phone, that called into the show. We definitely thank you. Again, Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta, you can reach them at blacknonbelievers.org. You can reach me at blackfreethinkers.com on the front of my Blog Talk radio show. And I also want to thank Travis from Funny to the Moon, Travis and Tana, great friends of ours, friends of the show there. So we're going to go into the after show, but if you all want to call in, please do. All right, so, yeah, going back to what you were saying, yeah, so you're up there in Canada, so the same thing is pretty much happening up there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's universal.
Yeah, because I remember that one revival started up in Canada with all of that crazy laughter. I forget what it's called. But they had that quote-unquote laughing spirit. It started at a revival up there in Canada. So, yeah, you all are experiencing the same, you know, madness that we're getting down here as well.
Yeah, it. But I will say our atheist groups are much more stronger here than what I'd say in the States. And a lot of our atheist groups are based in the colleges and universities. So,
we have freedom, and we have freedom of religion. You can tell, you know, how much, you know, how free we are. Shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was being totally sarcastic. I was being totally confused for that.
But, yeah, no, but the thing is that, you know, over the past, 10 years, really, people that are following non-belief or dissatisfied believer, atheism, whatever you may call yourself, the numbers have grown exponentially, and it's growing even more. So that's the reason why I just feel that it's important that, you know, we get out there, we have a faith, we're, you know, have to be a viable force in the community, and get out here and actually help the people, show people that, you know, just because you're a non-believer, that doesn't make you an ogre. It doesn't make you a monster. It just means that, you know, you just see things differently, period. That's what it all boils down to. They believe, we don't believe. That's the main difference between the two of us, but yet we're still human. We still bleed red. We still have to eat. We still do all of these things. We still have a lot of commonalities. And just because we're non-believers, that doesn't mean that we're mean and evil, and in some cases they believe we worship the devil, and that's not the truth. So we have to educate each other.
True.
We definitely do. Definitely do.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, we have another caller that wants to speak now. Step three. Turn your radio down, dear. You're on a line.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes.
My name is Rasul Amin. I represent Independent Ministry, and my theme is how to put the neighbor back in the hood. And I'm in New York sitting in the park right now, so if there's too much noise in the background, let me know. I may have to call back in. But I've been listening for quite a while. I'm enjoying what's being said. And you said one word a minute ago that really caught my attention. You said commonality. And this is one of the problems that we face in religious language. Man has more in common than division. But what happens is we focus more on the division, and this is why we don't get anywhere. The gravity that holds me down here in America is the same gravity that holds the people down in China or Africa. It's not a Christian gravity. It's not a Muslim gravity. Well, it's not a Jewish gravity. The air that we breathe belongs to humanity, not any particular belief. So what has happened is they have given us religious language in such a way in allegorical stories that this is why you have so many followers and less leaders. See, it's about self-leadership. When you talk about Adam to Jesus or Muhammad or wherever you stop at, that represents potential that's in the human being. Not just a physical man. Was Adam the first man that walked the earth? Or was he a type? Was he a community? They talk about Jesus being born from the womb of a woman named Mary without a father. But everything came here by two. Mary represents a community. Jesus was a word, a sign, pointing to something that was to come. So one of the, what I'm basically saying is scriptural language has been given in such a way that this is why we have mass confusion. You know, I also believe that it's time to come out of these churches, mosques, and synagogues and work in these streets, especially where I live with the youth, spend some time with them and show that they have people that care about them. They're not bad. They're just confused. We live in an oppressive word environment. We live in an oppressive word environment. Lil Wayne, the rapper, came out with an album. He sold 1 million copies in a week out of prison. I'm not a human being. That's a dangerous language to put out of here to someone that's not thinking. Nike got a slogan, just do it. So, you know, we have to do something about combating the language. Every tub shall set on its own bottom. No bearer burden shall bear the burden of another, and you shall carry your own cross. That's all pointing to within your own self. When you came out of the womb of your mother and you went to her breast for milk, you didn't learn that from any sheikh, scholar, imam, church minister, or whatever. It's your nature. So all we have to do is get in touch with our nature, back to our original nature, and we could be all right. But we have to address the language issue that we face out here in the communities. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, Russell. And, you know, to kind of piggyback on what you said there, yes, you know, it is, you know, somewhat about the language. However, again, it's up to us to teach our children critical thinking skills, how to utilize their common sense, critical thinking skills, and to be skeptical when needed. Because, again, if these kids are being heavily influenced by these celebrities or pseudo-celebrities, then, again, it goes, I'm looking at the parent, because did you allow the television, did you allow the CDs, did you allow the computer to raise your child? What did you input into that child so that child will know that even though he made that little song that he's not a human, that's not correct? You know, he is a human being. If he's not a human, then what is he?
Exactly. You know, one of the things that has happened with me, you know, I'm African-American. You know, I came up through the church. Then I got involved with Islam. And what happened for me, though, is I seen the independence in it, and I seen the message that was, you know, talking to me and my soul personally, and this is how I came up with independent ministry. Now, what I do is I do a couple of things, but one of the things I do is when I take the youth to the masjid, to the mosque, I don't take them there to convert them to Islam or make them become Muslims. I take them there and we give them a talk about the history from the time they got off the slave ships until today. Now, if they show an interest in my particular faith, then what we'll do is we're obligated to share with them. But the intention is not to bring them there to convert them or anything because, you know, I think the Creator wants you to be where you're supposed to be. Because in all faiths, whatever the religion is, if you really understand it, is to bring out the best in you, not to make you a slave follower of any particular congregation or particular minister or imam. And most people don't know that. And I heard y'all saying in the beginning, I think one of the gentlemen said, you can read the Bible at your house or whatever. That's exactly right. You know, you're supposed to read for yourself and do critical thinking. You know, we depend on the scholars of the world and to bring us information and stuff, and many of them are stuck in times that the world no longer exists for that type of thinking at that time. You know, a scholar is one who goes in and brings out new information, and that's in all of us. So thank you.
You're welcome. And so I guess my question is, just, you know, listening to the statement you made, you say you teach them about how the slave ships came to this country. Do you teach them about how those Africans were enslaved?
Yes, well, exactly. What I do is I'm also a relationship developer. I deal with people of different faiths and backgrounds, like I said, to establish community life. And what I do is I bring in speakers to speak who have the qualifications in those areas. You know, they know that Muslims were slaveholders and sold black people off. You know, we give them that history. But my position is, you know, we can go back and back and back, but my history is distinguished from when the time I got off the slave ship and back in them plows, you know. So it doesn't do me anything personally to know that we were great kings and queens in Africa, and the brothers is on the corner now, dope addicts, prostitutes, and things of that nature, you know. So I don't really have to go back that far. So we, you know, we share, and they ask those type of serious questions, dealing with history and, you know, who was the first man and things of that nature. So it gets pretty broad.
Okay, again, you said that you believe in critical thinking skills. So I guess my question to you would be, in your opinion, what is the purpose of religion and why is it important?
What is, say that again, I'm sorry, the perfect what?
Oh, yeah, no, what is the purpose of religion and why is it important?
Well, in terms of how religion is being presented today, I don't think it's such a good thing. But in terms of understanding the essence of Scripture, Scripture is to bring out the best in you as a human being. See, even though I say I recognize myself as Muslim, Muslim only means a true human. And that's the same for a Christian if he understands his Christianity or his Judaism. All of this designed to bring out the best in you. See, there's an essence of truth, a line there that runs through all scriptures that point to the oneness of humanity and that there's something greater than us. So the confusion comes in, like I said, is when you don't think and research for yourself and you just depend on others, and this is why we have such a mess.
Okay, so I guess I would take that a little further, and I would say many people who are non-believers, not all, but many people who are non-believers, they believe in themselves. So they believe that they can bring out the best in themselves. So in essence, they don't necessarily need a religion to be a good person. Would you agree that it's all pretty much the same across the board, whereas, you know, some people need the Bible or need the Quran or what have you to bring out the best in them, but those of us who have evolved beyond that and have figured out that, you know, we can bring the best out in ourselves, we have to believe in ourselves, don't we have just as much validity, if not more?
Yes, you do. Matter of fact, one of my best friends is an atheist. And what happened is I do construction, and we were working on a big construction job together. And there was some Muslims on the job who would debate with him every day at break and lunch. And I just was never in that area. So one day I was walking through, and they said, well, here comes Rasul. Ask him the question. So the atheist said, oh, my God, another Muslim? So to make a long story short, I went in another direction with him. And right now, me and him are the best of friends. We do things together. We don't even discuss religion anymore. And I'm closer to him than some of my own faith. Now, if there's any Muslims listening, they'll jump in and tell me that I'm off track and that I shouldn't be making such a statement. So, you know, I don't care personally where you're at. As long as you contribute to the good of society and not the ills, you are right with me. You can be my neighbor. So, you know, I'm fine with that because you don't have to answer to me anyway.
See, you're sounding like a free thinker to me.
I'm sorry, the wind is blowing. Say that one more time.
I said you're sounding like a free thinker, or you're on the precipice of becoming a free thinker. Interesting.
Well, I think that's how I came up with independent ministry. I'm not, you know, I'm not locked down under anybody, and you know, and matter of fact, it has opened many doors for me because I have great relationships with many people of different ideologies and background. But like I said, when I go into a conversation with different people, I go in with what's in common. One of the first things I learned when I started interfaith dialogue is to become friends first and then let it all hang out. So if you let it hang out at the door, you may never become friends.
That's right. That's how I look at things with, like dating people and stuff. I mean, I can't never, like, come out and just be like, hey, I'm an atheist. I'm a, you know, devout atheist. I just wait till them to bring up Jesus or whoever, and then I just be like, well, no, I don't believe in that or any of the other stuff either, and leave it like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, that's good because I'll just share one other thing briefly. Years ago, I was living in an area, and when I turned the corner to the street where I was living, there was an old lady that sat on the porch, her and her husband, but she was mostly out there. So for about 6 months, when I come in for work in the evening, I would speak to her, and she would say, hello, young man. And that went on for about 6 months. So one evening I came in, she said, young man, she said, could you come on the porch? Can I ask you a question? So I went up there. So she said, where are you from? I live in a town called East Orange. That's in New Jersey. So she said, young man, where are you from? I said, right here at East Orange. She said, no, where are you from? I said, East Orange, born and raised, 54 years. She said, no, you got to be from down south because your manners are southern, right? So she said, there's something about you. So she said, well, what is it you do? I said, well, I pray 5 times a day. And she said, that's it. I knew it. I knew there was something about you. Not so much about me praying 5 times a day, but it was the idea that she was a devout, older woman. She was a Christian. And basically she was letting me know that I knew there was something about you that was connected to, you know, a moral life, so to speak. And we became the best of friends up until I left there. And it got to the point that was my stop when I came in. And I would sit there maybe an hour or two, and my children would come down the street because they know I should have been home from work, but they knew where I was at, down there talking to Miss Taylor, you know. And me and her, we never got into a thing. She sometimes would ask me a couple of questions about how I felt about, was Jesus the Son of God and stuff like that. But it wound up just being a general conversation after that about life, about children. She was very impressed with, I'm 54 years old. I got 5 sons and 2 daughters by the same woman. My wife lived up the street. I lived down the street. When she was 7 years old, I snuck a kiss on her cheek on the side of the porch, and we've been together ever since. So my moral life is already in me naturally to do the right thing, even before I got involved with religious beliefs and stuff. So it's already clocked in us to do the right thing. It's just that language comes along and confuses us.
Right.
So you believe that morality and ethics are innate and not necessarily governed by religion?
Yes, I believe that it's right there. Just like I said, you know, when I was growing up and through my teenage years and, you know, running around. And like I said, my wife now, you know, she put up with me and she stayed in there. And, you know, but when my first child was born, then my second child was born, you know, I didn't need a scripture or anything to tell me to do the right thing. You know, it was my nature that said I got to do the right thing, you know. And I've always worked and did what I had to do. And up until today, not one of my children could tell you that we never seen Dad not come in at night. I might have went away 1 week for a construction job out of the whole time. My oldest son is 34, and my youngest child, my daughter, is 15.
Oh, you have a nice spread there, 15 to 34.
Yeah, I have five sons, then my daughters came. I have 34, 30, 27, 25, 22, 18, and 15, and 10 grandchildren.
You know, I don't even plan on having anything too, man. I don't even think I'm gonna jump that, but you know, it tripped me out that even as an atheist, that whenever I do something nice for people, they insist. You know, a lot of people tell me, especially they're religious, you're a good guy. I can tell you that's God in you. And I'm like, no, it's not. Trust me, it's not. Yes, it is. You may not want to admit it. You may not want to accept it, but it is. No, it's not. Trust me. You know what I'm saying? I just did this shit because I'm a kind person. You know, that's all it is. You know. And, you know, you can't force me to accept anything that I don't want to accept just because it's something you accept, you know. And it's just, you know, I hate it when people do that because, you know, it's not fair that, you know, like somebody will ask me something, like I meet a girl and she'll be like, you don't believe in God, you don't go to church. If I ask you to come to church, would you come? I'm like, well, let me ask you a question. If I ask you not to go, would you stay? She's like, no. I'm like, well, then why should I go? If you don't respect my views enough to, you know what I'm saying, to meet me in the middle, why should I even go? Because you're trying to take the superior high ground on the situation, and that's not, you know what I'm saying, you're trying to act like you're helping me when I'm fine.
What?
You know.
Hey, may I share my webpage with you guys? You know, sometimes it's good to know who you're talking to, and we can see each other. But if anybody's interested, not to contact me, so I'm going to teach on you or nothing. But just to let you know who I am, I have a webpage if you're interested in just taking a look at it, or even just staying in contact with each other. I mean, because that's what it's about, developing relationships and bringing humanity back on track. You know, we're scattered all over the place. I don't know where you guys are. I'm in Jersey. You're there. You know, now suppose all of us had this type of thinking and we were together in areas, we could put the neighbor back in the hood if you lived there. You know, when I grew up, it was a neighborhood. Now, so maybe where your area is, it may not have as many problems as with the youth as we have, but, you know, there's somebody or something going on in your community that probably needs some straightening out.
Right. Like
sure.
That.
Go ahead.
Boom.
What's your website?
Boom.
Okay. It's www, and it's one word, but it's spelled this way. It's Independent Ministry. It's independministries.info.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, Rasul,
okay, Amin. Yes, Rasul, R-A-S-U-L-A-M-I-N. Rasul means one who likes to talk, relationship developer, and Amin means honest and trustworthy. That means that if I live next door to you and your husband goes away on business, he can be sure that you have a neighbor there that will look out for her, just like it's his own family, and he don't have to worry about nothing.
That's real.
Some
like
people take that a bit literally, though. No.
Hey,
Can y'all hear me?
Mm-hmm. Hold on, wait. They're doing some banging now. They're setting up the skating rink. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Bryant Park in New York, but they have skating in the winter, movies in summer. Very nice place.
Okay,
go ahead. I did enough talking. I'm going to listen. Now there's some more questions. Thank you so much, though.
Can you hear me, Kim?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. What I was saying to the brother in East Orange, and this shouldn't be, but it's a good thing, especially, you know, the way things are going in the black community these days. You said you have 7 kids by 1 woman. You got two girls and 5 boys. Well, I kind of know, you know, how you feel. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But the bad thing is that the bad thing in the black community is that is rare. You know what I'm saying? And it shouldn't be rare. I'm okay with, you know, if a guy has 2 or 3 baby mamas, and if you take care of your kids and you've been in a couple of bad relationships here and there and it didn't work out and you take care of your kids, you spend time with your kids, you know, that's a good thing. But there are too many situations like that where we have one man with 4 baby mamas. Me and my wife, we have 5 kids and 1 on the way. And I get it all the time. Oh, that's great. That's you got, you know, you and your wife got 5 kids and all your kids are about 1 woman. Yeah, that's great. But it shouldn't be rare. It should be something that people are able to see more. You know what I'm saying? I understand people get bad relationships and sometimes things don't work out or whatever. But I don't know. I'm only 31, but it just seems like I should see more cases like mine. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I'm just old fashioned. I don't like the direction that the community is going.
Yeah, I feel you on that. It's just the mentality of people today, and you know how rough it is out here in times and stuff. I mean, I was with my son mother for 5 years, and I mean, she just got overly religious and crazy with it and stuff, and she started, like, somebody else was saying about the devil worshiping thing. She called me out and said I was a devil worshiper and stuff, and I'm like, whoa, you've been living with me for 5 years. When I have a devil's Bible, or you see me out here drinking blood or something, I'm like, I don't believe in any of that. I'm like, you know me better than anybody knows me, and I mean, we finally part ways and stuff because of that, and there was no really reason for that. And I got a 4-year-old son through that situation and stuff, and I'm trying to get custody of him now because he loves me to death and he want to be with me. He has a fit and really doesn't like it every time he has to leave me, but it's just sad that, you know, you have so many differences over religion and just ignorance of people not understanding things, instead of people trying to, you know, use like a book or the internet and stuff and, you know, research things that they don't understand. They just make assumptions, and these assumptions cause detrimental problems.
Exactly. That's a good point. You know, it's just like in construction. Now, if everybody was a carpenter, nothing would get built. That's why you got carpenters, electricians, plumbers, masons, you know, and they all in their areas know their areas. Like, you know, I'm a painter. You know, how I look telling a mason how to lay that block work, or how him telling me, you know, my profession. But what we got to do is we bring that commonality together, that this structure has to be established, and then we come in and do what we got to do, you know. And that's how we have to be, you know, as humanity, you know. And one of the things, too, that a lot of people need to get back to is nature. See, because before there was any physical scriptural books, humanity looked at nature. If you look at a tree, if you look at the tree in the 100 degree weather, and you go over there and stand under the shade, you get shade and relief. That's charity. That's an act of charity, you know. So, you know, we have to be also like the tree. The man has to be like the tree. The tree is in every society, hood, or suburbs, whatever. And that tree roots itself down, and then it grows up strong, and it branches out over all the nonsense. And it doesn't go anywhere, and it's still amongst the madness. And that's how man has to be. We have to learn how to look at nature and look at those signs and come back on course. You know, the thing about the Jesus being the Son of God, well, he said, I'm the light of the world as long as I'm in the world. But if you check out the history of Scripture and language, it was originally spelled S-U-N, meaning the light, not S-O-N. So there's been mass confusion, and this is, like I said, we have to deal with language. Language is so important, you know, to keep us going. You have people today that sit in rooms, maybe 10, 12, 13 members, and they throw big concepts back and forth at each other. And then they put it out here in society and community, and this is how they rule us. Just like in France and Paris every year, they say, we're going to show how we're going to dress the women. Pretty soon, the women are going to be walking around with nothing on. They said that there was a saying, one of the prophets, they asked, when was the sign of the day of judgment? And he said, well, I don't know the answer to that, just like the one asking. He said, but it'll be the day when you see women wearing garments of clothes so tight that you can look at them and tell every portion of their body. And you have that going on today. Now, to me, that doesn't mean that the world is in, and a man will always be here. There have been societies wiped out that we don't even know about. So, you know, man will always be here. We just, the corrupt leadership will fall and it'll come right again. We just got to keep it on course when it happens.
Right, but I guess my question about that is that, you know, corrupt leadership has always been there, as far as the church is concerned. And it's just with the advent of the internet, it's being exposed more and more. The information is reaching more people. They're finding out that a lot of these issues are more common than they had, you know, realized. And so I guess with me, the way I see it is that as they begin to evolve and get more information to them, I don't understand how they don't just walk away, because it doesn't work. They've been sowing seeds for generations. Grandma, great-grandma, they all sold money hoping that their payoff will come. It's like a big lottery, you know, and a lot of them invest money in church, sow seeds, what have you, thinking that they're going to have some big payoff, and it never happens. And so I guess my question is, when will they come to the realization that they're being scammed?
Well, when they come back to rational thinking, the prophet Abraham, he looked at the star and he thought that was the creator. But when the star set, he said, my creator is not one that goes away. So then he seen the moon. And when the moon went away, and the moon being brighter and bigger than the star, he said, well, this must be the creator. And then that went away. So then when he seen the sun, he said, wow, now this has to be the creator. But when the sun set, he said, wow, my creator is not one who sets or goes away. So this is why Abraham is considered the rational thinking human being. And like I said earlier, don't see Abraham or Adam as a physical man walking around. It's a potential that resides in all of us. And that's what we have to get back to, our rational thinking. And this will benefit us. But, you know, I'm not playing the race card here, but I just want to say particularly, African Americans have been crying out in the name of Jesus since we got off them slave ships, and ain't no Red Sea open for us yet, ain't nothing happened, because we have to do this ourselves, because we're so locked in to this way of life, religion that man and people have given to us, and you know that's why. When I caught the conversation and I heard where you guys were going, I listened for quite a while, and I wanted to come in at the right time and, you know, not be one browbeating and bashing, because that's not my thing. But I need to say this. I have to, my wife's flagging me. She's right here. I have to go over to the deli for her. If I cut off, can I call back in, or you have to stay on once it goes off on the laptop?
Yeah, once it goes off on the internet, then you have to be dialed in. But we're here every Sunday. Every Sunday, 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, which is 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Sunday, and, you know, we have topics. Sometimes we'll have open mic like we have today. And, you know, you're welcome to call in anytime. Again, you know, also you can have, you know, other people call in. We're open. We will talk to people of faith. As a matter of fact, we enjoy it. Because, you know, we want to know where, you know, what you're thinking, and, you know, we can present what we have to you, you present what you have to us, but we can be civil and disagree without being disagreeable.
Well,
and
I'll share
we're learning to know each other. Go ahead, dear.
Well, I'd like to share this with you. Since you have my webpage, my email is there. If you can send me, like, show reminder, I'd definitely like to come back in. But we have a program that comes on Monday through Friday night, but particularly Tuesday night and Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time. It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's called American Muslim 360, and it comes on at 7 o'clock till 10 o'clock, and it's 3 hours with three different topics. Now, on Tuesday night, you can listen to the whole program, but on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, the gentleman who comes on and speaks, his name is Qasim Ahmed. His program is called The Rational Inquiry. And what he deals with is scriptural language and the rationale behind it, and he deals with words and language. I think you'll find it interesting. It's not a program to convert you to Islam or anything. He deals with language. And the same thing happens on Wednesday night at the same time, 8 o'clock. And his name is Fahim. He's from Oakland, California. And he does an excellent job with language, too. So I think you would enjoy it and find it beneficial to listen in. And it's the same. You can call in and press 1 and make comments. So I just wanted to share that with you, and I'm going to try to make it next week again. And whoever's on the line, I really enjoyed. I had a good time. I hope I didn't say anything offensive, and if I said anything that's beneficial, I just think that I said the right thing. And I like to end like this. May the peace that only the Creator give upon every one of you guys, your families, and your communities. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in, Russell. Yeah, we appreciate it, and we enjoy talking with you. And, you know, we can learn from each other. So we appreciate it. I'll check out the show. I followed it. So it'll send me the reminders. And if you follow my show, it'll send you the reminders when we have shows scheduled. So we can go from there. But until then, you know, you go on and, you know, spend some time with your wife. But it was a pleasure.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, take care, Russell. So, you know, again, you know, thank you guys. We appreciate everyone who called in, you know, Frank, Mario, Russell, the young lady that called in, Big Mike, all of our callers. You know, we thank you all for calling in. We thank everyone who's going to listen to the archives that came into the chat room. And this was a pretty good show today. We learned a lot, and I just found it interesting, you know, that he acknowledged the fact that, you know, we believe in ourselves, and he acknowledged it. And basically, that was just interesting. Very, very interesting. I have to let that process a little more. That interaction. I'm going to go back and listen to the archives. But anyway, again, thank you guys. Thank everyone. Thank you, Travis, from Funny to the Moon. Again, you all can find Mandy's information and Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta at blacknonbelievers.org. You can find my information on blackfreethinkers.com. And until then, we will see you next Sunday. And this is Black Free Thinkers. We're here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. And this is where we walk by sight, not faith. Thank you all, and have a good evening.